Afros in the Diaspora, and today we have Tandy from Malawi. Hello, hello.
Boop, boop, hello. So happy to be on.
Yes, welcome to the podcast. How are you feeling?
I'm feeling good. I'm feeling excited for today's chat.
Yes, I am too. And we're going to go right into our trivia. So I hope you got ready because...
You know what? Hit me, girl. Hit me because...
I just hit you. Okay.
You know, procrastination is...
is real.
It's real. But, you know, I should know this stuff. It's my country. Let's see.
In my opinion, the questions I ask are simple.
Okay.
Not everybody will agree, but...
Ask me afterwards and I'm gonna tell you.
You let me know. Okay.
No, what I think. Yeah.
All right. Let's start with who is the current president of Malawi?
Oh, come on. I don't know this actually. I genuinely don't know this. That's so bad.
Would you like me to just provide some options for you?
Yeah, it's on the tip of my tongue. So I'm sure if I hear it. Okay.
We have Bakuli Muzuli, and then we have Peter Mutharika. We have Lazarus Chakwera.
It's Lazarus Chakwera.
Okay. Yeah, that's the answer.
Right?
Yeah.
Was on the tip of my tongue. But yeah.
When did he become president?
Oh, okay. I don't know. This was 2007.
No. Way more recent. Think pandemic year.
Oh, really? 2019? 2020?
2020, yeah.
I think the former president... Okay, actually, no. Don't quote me on any of that. Yeah. Okay, perfect.
Okay. All right. What... Can you describe the flag of Malawi for me?
Green, red, and black with the sun, well, half sun, rising sun. Fun fact, Malawi in Chewa and Tumbuka means flames. So, it's like the dawning of a new age, you know, colonialism, we are rising. So, yeah, those are our three main colors.
That's okay. Well done. Good job.
Thanks.
You got that one. See, easy, easy, right?
Yeah.
Okay.
It's easy. It's common sense.
Yeah. Okay. In what year did Lilongwe become the capital of Malawi?
Oh, damn. Oh, I don't know this one.
And what was the capital prior to this?
The capital before was Zomba. So,
okay, correct.
Yeah. That's our fourth biggest city currently. I don't know what year. We only gained independence in 1964. Mm-hmm. So Els, which is what us Malawians call Lilongwe. Mm-hmm. Wild guess, 1972.
You're pretty close.
Really?
You're pretty close.
Okay.
You're 3 years off. I'll give you one more try. You're 3 years off.
1975?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
Congrats. That's you're doing well. Come on. You're doing well. Come on.
I'm trying.
Yes. Okay.
Yeah.
Malawi has two official languages. What are they?
English and Chewa. Or Chichewa.
Chichewa.
Yeah.
Wonderful. And that's correct. In what year did Malawi become a republic? When did Malawi become a republic? Which is different from independence.
Independence? Oh, shizzle.
Yeah.
I'm not going to lie. I don't know the difference. Something to learn. I'm not sure. 1963?
No, it was after independence that they became a republic.
67?
You're off by a year.
Okay, 68 probably. No? Or 66? Damn. Okay.
July, yeah.
Yeah, 6th of July. Okay.
What is Malawi's largest city?
Lilongwe.
No.
Oh, really?
Yeah. It starts with a B.
Blantyre.
Yeah.
Blantyre is what we call
it. Blantyre. Yeah.
I don't know if it's the largest, but yeah, okay. Fair enough.
According to the interweb?
Yeah, me and the interweb.
According to the online?
I'll take that one, fine. Blantyre. It is the most popping, you know, out of the two cities, so.
The most popping?
Yeah.
Mm. So, that's the New York of...
Yeah, I'd say, if you want to call it New York, but yeah. it's where you want to be, where things happen a bit. Yeah,
pretty much. Kind of like Lagos with Nigeria.
Yeah, okay. I'd say this is similar, yeah.
Yeah, okay. Which of the following oceans borders Malawi? Indian Ocean, Pacific Ocean, Atlantic Ocean.
We don't border in a fucking ocean. Malawi does not border.
That was a trick question. Okay, you saw through it. You saw through it.
Because we have Lake Malawi, so we have like beaches all across, you know, the eastern side. Mm-hmm. But I'm always having to explain to people, yeah, we have beaches, yeah, we have fish and snorkeling, all of that, but we're not bordered by an ocean. And they're like, what? So, yeah. Yes,
okay.
I was like, ooh, I was about to have a whole identity crisis. No. If you had told me, like, ocean, I'm like, girl.
Yeah, that was a trick one. It's a landlocked country.
Played well. Yes.
Period. Okay. What are the countries that border Malawi?
Zambia, Mozambique, and Tanzania.
These are too easy for you, man. Like, you studied medicine. Of course you know about your country.
Girl, like, I had to learn. It was being an international student that forced me to really know my country. People will ask you, you know, how many, like, what's the population of your country? And I'll be there like, oh, I don't actually know. So then it forced me to, like, level up, definitely. But
yeah. 100%. Well, you did great.
Thank you.
All right. You did great. I think you aced all of them or most of them. So
allow me out here repping. I'll clap
for you. Well done.
Thank you. Thank you
have done your people proud. Okay.
Don't keep up with current affairs. That's my problem.
Okay. Next, we're going to go into some African mother sayings.
Oh, okay.
Oh, yeah. You won't get yourself in trouble. fingers crossed, of course. What are some things you remember your mom saying growing up as a kid and even up till now? Because, like, once a mom, always a mom.
Always a mom, and there's always wisdom.
And there's always wisdom. One of the things I remember, this is like, I feel like most African kids relate to this. I can speak for Nigeria because that's where I'm from. And it's like, if they say, oh, Sarah, go and bring my handbag for me.
Yeah.
Her room.
Yeah.
Oh, mommy, where should I keep it? On my head.
Oh, my head,
put
yeah.
Put it on my head.
Yeah. And
imagine having the temerity to actually put it
on their head. Like, they don't mean these things literally.
It's not literal.
You like, find out the hard way.
The hard way, man. African sarcasm is something else.
It is something else, yeah. Something my mom used to always say, she used to say it in Chichewa, but like our native tongue, mm-hmm. but essentially, like, nothing comes for free, you know? So, like, everything, there's hard work, there's something, there's a price to be paid for it, is like the English translation, I'd say.
Yeah.
So that, you know, it can be said very lightheartedly, you know, somebody's giving you a sweet, she's like, nothing comes for free. Now that I've gotten older, it rings true with everything nowadays, you know, and just the idea that, like, most people who give you free stuff, you gotta question where it's coming from, what the intentions are, etc. Like, the reason why it rings true now and I still value it is because it reminds me to be diligent, to be on the lookout, and to have your own back at the end of the day, because you know, nothing comes for free. So,
yeah. That's a very, very good one. That's a very good, like, word of advice nugget that moms would just be like,
mm-hmm.
You know what I mean?
Like, don't be expecting, like, the world to.
That, when you hear that, is it's not an ordinary,
mm-hmm.
It comes with years of wisdom and experience.
Yeah.
Right?
Absolutely.
Like, you know, a word of advice or, you know, recommendation, suggestion, all that stuff.
Absolutely, yeah.
I know there's some petty sayings, because it's also like Eddie says, he's like, I did not kill my mother, you will not kill me.
Yeah.
There's that one. Mm-hmm. And then, but they're also like words of wisdom to just kind of get you and your heart ready for life, basically.
Yeah.
Awesome. Thank you for getting into this trivia with me, for getting into the icebreakers. Yeah, let's talk about your story. And today, we're just, you know, you're sharing your story with us. We're talking about, like, you and, you know, your experience as an international student in Asia. You're sharing with us your immigration story, pressure from parents and stuff when it comes to what to study and what you want to be in the world. But yeah, would you mind starting with your immigration story?
Okay, yeah. So, like, a little bit about my background. You know, everybody, like, every immigrant thinks their story is so, like, you know, complex and crazy. And it's only when you start talking about them that you realize that, oh, okay, everybody came from somewhere. And that journey, that trip is not always a easily explainable one. But in short, in, like, summary, I was born in Malawi. And around the time I was 1 year old, so before the age of two, my parents moved with me. I'm first born to America. So we lived in Michigan State for essentially the first 9-10 years of my life. So up until then, I'd had what I'd say like a very hybrid Malawian American upbringing. And whilst we were in America, my parents also had my two younger sisters. So, they were born there. And by the time I got to 10, we had a big culture shock in terms of moving back to South Africa or moving to Africa in general. But we moved specifically to Johannesburg for a year. And that was when I fully started to think about my identity, honestly, and my identity as an African and being somebody who's different. So my sisters and I always had that kind of background of moving and always being the new girls in town, but also having such a story complex that you don't even want to explain it. When people are like, oh, where are you from? It's like, yeah, okay, I'm from Malawi, but like, it doesn't explain my American accent, right? Mm-hmm. So we lived in South Africa for a year and then we moved to the UK. So we lived in Manchester for another, you know, 9-10-ish years. And then I moved, like, by the time I was 18, it's time for me to go to university. I started university in Wales. So that was an interesting experience. Like, everybody, you know, when you think of the UK, you think of like this whole island, but, Wales is so different from England and is so different from Scotland in a way that, you know, West African countries are, we say West Africa and we know that there's similarities, but each country is different. So that was a culture shock itself, going to university in Wales. And then I decided it just kind of wasn't for me and decided to go to move to Malaysia to study medicine. So I completed my medical degree completely in Asia, which was, again, a huge culture shock. But during that time, whilst I was figuring out myself on the other side of the world, my parents kind of moved back from, you know, the UK back to Canada. So, yeah, essentially. And that's where they decided to settle. And that is where I find myself today. So I'm based here in Calgary. Woohoo. Hopefully, I mean, let me not say hopefully, but for now, I'm done being the new immigrant. I'm still settling kind of back in to Canada. So like the weird thing I'd say is like, you know, North America or like Michigan is very similar to Canada. So I can kind of blend in. But then there are certain things that I'll say, and it's such an American thing that they're like, you know, and I'm like, oh yeah, I'm experiencing. And then also just being away for so long, I almost feel like an immigrant back here again, which is weird in and of itself. But hey, but that's navigating. True.
You are an immigrant here.
Yeah.
Like, that's the way it is. Like, you know? But oh my gosh, thank you for sharing that. I have
no worries. Questions. Absolutely.
Of course, because this is an interaction. Would you mind talking a little bit more about your experience as an international student in Asia, studying medicine, which is freaking heavyweight?
Yeah.
What was that like? Like, what was it? What were some cultural shocks that you experienced? What were some challenges that you faced? What were some things that were positive surprises too that you experienced that were like, oh, this is incredible. Like, what would you mind just talking us through your experience?
Yeah. So like I said, I did a year of studying biomedical sciences in the UK, which was amazing. I had such a great experience, etc. But I feel like, well, you know, my family and I kind of ran into the problem that a lot of most students, international students face, which is finances. And just the idea that, like, I couldn't, like, in my head, I felt morally wrong that we were paying so much to be an international student, especially, you know, just me having been in the UK for just as long as most other people. But here I was being asked to pay £20,000 for what? You know what I mean? Literally, that was international student fees. And at the time, I wasn't even studying what I wanted to do. So I had always wanted to be a medical doctor. But at the same time, I wanted to be a lot of things. You know, me and my brain, I wanted to be an explorer, an artist, a writer. I wanted to be all the things. And you know what? Maybe I will. But yes. Like, the African parent, the African culture latches on to the medicine thing, and that's the only thing that they'll support. And
they're running with it, yep.
And they run with it. And because you already said it, you know, I mean, I feel like a lot of us can relate to just, you know, considering doing medicine or engineering or something. At some point in your life, you thought, yeah, maybe I can do it. Maybe I can hack it. I think the difference with me is like I did genuinely want to be a doctor, and it was what I wanted to do. And so I was infuriated with having to pay that much. And so I started looking elsewhere across the world, to be honest. I applied for Canada, I applied for the US. I applied for the US. I even got a scholarship. And it was ironic because I got my visa denied, which I think is something. Yeah, I did. After having lived in the US for like 10 whatever years, now I want to go study and I'm willing to pay all this money. And the visa people were kind of like, nah, we don't want you. So it kind of forced me to like redirect my dreams, if that makes sense, or to at least be more flexible and open to how I get there. Like, for the first time in my life, I had to be like, girl, what is it that you actually want? And I was like, I want to be a doctor, and I don't care where I have to be a doctor. You know what I mean? Yeah. So like started inquiring, and then Malaysia just kind of popped up. It was convenient. It was affordable. And I just wanted to travel. I'm not going to lie. I wanted to go somewhere hot and tropical. And, you know, Malaysia borders Thailand and Singapore. So, like, you know what? You know, that's not a bad option. And then there are a lot of African students that do go to Malaysia to study. Yeah. So that's how I ended up there. A lot of people don't expect to end up there, but I think it was probably the best thing that could have ever happened to me, because I completed medical school in a lot shorter and a lot cheaper, I think I'd say, than if I, you know, tried to force myself in the Western system. But, you know, it had its good and its bad, like every place. A lot of experiences. The racism in Asia is on steroids. It's crazy. Oh, and nobody be talking about it. You know, it's very overt. It's very, it's very hurtful as well. It's more hurtful, I'd say. Okay, maybe let me not say more. You know, I don't want to compare traumas, but like compared to the microaggressions of the West, which is what I was used to. To go to Asia, essentially, and it's common across, you know, most Asian countries, and, you know, be like told, oh, we don't rent out like places to black people, literally Africans, genuinely. You know, I'd call up a place, genuinely, I'd call up a place, they hear my voice, okay, cool, cool, cool. Even with your passport, as soon as they see you're black, and it's not against the law, you know, it's not, there's no way to hold these places accountable or whatever. But because you're the student, you're the foreigner, you just kind of have to live by the rules of a new land, which I feel like any immigrant, any international student gets in terms of, you know, you're like, but what? You're trying to figure out it, Shizzle, and, you know, it's not making sense, but you, what option do you have but to live in that reality? So it was stuff like that. Being a medical school, like medical student specifically there, was also really tricky, you know, to a lot of people, you are the first black person they're ever meeting. So they're going to ask you questions about your hair. They're going to ask you questions about, yeah, in professional context, I've come to see you about what you're, you know, experiencing. And, you know, the conversation kind of turns towards, and then you'd have, I mean, you know, you'd have issues with quote unquote professionalism, for example. There were a couple of like students on my, like in my class, in my batch, I should say, who were forced to cut their afros off because it's not professional. It's not professional in a Western context. And then again, there's nothing really you can do.
Cut it off?
Yeah, completely, like shave their heads. Or come up with a different style,
right?
To hide it, but they didn't want to see guys with cornrows, even, you know, because it's very, like, the thing we don't talk about. I don't know. Like, the thing we don't talk about is how these countries, a lot of every other country, is still experiencing the effects of colonialization and just like. Everybody wants to fit into what they think a Western white world, you know, values. And so that's what they taught us as medical students. Like, you need to fit in. And so it was challenging at times. Oh, no, most, a lot of the times it was challenging. And I feel like I became more homesick as time went on. But you know what? We pushed through. I'm very grateful for the experience because if not, I wouldn't have met and like bonded with a lot of African students, to be honest. Like, the African community there is really strong, I'd say. There's a lot of people who will support you, etc., if you're willing to, like, you know, meet new people, etc. But like that, like, if it was not for my friends, I probably would not have like got out of med school there. It's like, it's hard. What I experienced is that it's hard to know whether or not something is due to being in medical school or like actual racism or, you know, just mean-spiritedness. And then you're kind of just forced to stumble through and find your way through whether or not it's due to you or the system as well. Like, yeah, I have a lot. I learned a lot about the higher education system. So you just kind of stumble through and make it and hope for the best. And I'm really, I'm lucky, I'm grateful because I did make it through. I graduated last year. So yeah, I'm here. Yeah. But it wasn't an easy journey.
Congratulations. You made it.
Thanks. Thanks.
Welcome.
Girl. Thanks.
So are you like, are you practicing medicine right now? What is the like process with, or are you, so, like, what is the plan with that?
So, like, I'm not practicing medicine yet, and it's a big yet, okay, because I will eventually. But, you know, coming back, it's the realization that the system here in North America and here in Canada, let's be very specific with Canada, they don't value other places as much as they value here. It's a bit egocentric, to be very honest. You could have a PhD from any other country and you come here and they're kind of like, oh, you didn't study at U of C? And it's so like, I'm going through the process of, I have licensing exams to take, which are expensive and time consuming. I have other stuff to put into my application. So rather than see it as like, all this stuff I have to do, I'm kind of taking the year to like settle in and to like gradually get to actually applying, and then I will practice medicine. I would love, and my plan is to practice family medicine. That's my tea. It's very me, as you might tell by the end of this session. But like, I'm not stressing. I refuse to stress because if medical school nearly finished me, I'm like, you know what? Let me get there in due time and without the pressure. So a big thing of me coming back was like taking off this pressure that I felt I'd always had to be successful. And then now as a graduate, you need to do this and this. Yeah. I was just like, girl, I'm not buying into that. If people want to think I'm a washout doctor, that's cool. But I know myself.
Oh my lord. You know? From where? You literally just graduated. How did you just graduate and you're like, no.
Girl. So yeah, that's where I'm at now. I'm kind of taking my time to do all these side quests and see how life goes. Yeah.
Well, shout out to you. And more muscle to you for freaking going through medicine. Because once upon a time, I said as a kid that I wanted to study medicine.
Oh, yeah? Yeah?
What kid? You're right. Like, what child did not say like, that? Like,
we were sold a lie. We were sold the dream.
We really were. Because, like, and then there's the reaction you get from, like, the people around when you say that. Right? Like when you say, I want to be
that
a doctor,
too,
your parents are like, oh, yes, my son.
There's
my
a lot of validation.
Yes, exactly.
And then you end up tying like your self-worth to these ideas of success.
Yes.
And I'm saying this as a person who went through it. It's not worth it. It's not worth it if it's not what you want to do.
Yes.
Genuinely. Don't do any of these courses, careers, whatever, if it's not like...
your part, you're like your passion, your heart, like what you want to do in the world. And I get it. Like sometimes people are like, well, I just want to make money, and doctors make a lot of money.
I get that too.
You know, I'm ready to put in the work. You know, like and there's some people who are like, I want to help people, and medicine is a really cool way to help people. And people have so many different like reasons for doing it. But
absolutely.
I know from my background that my especially my mother was like, oh, my daughter is about to be a doctor. Oh, wow. And I ended up not studying medicine at all. Like, I did not even come close to studying medicine. I'm an artist. And, you know,
that's amazing,
now
she's, though.
Yeah, it is. And she's my number one, like, fan. And she's like, what is your next gig? And, like, when she uses terms like that, I just smile.
Yeah.
I'm like, Mama, you've come a long way.
A long way.
But it's also really cool because, like, you know, family and, like, parents don't ever want to see their kid, like, I mean, good parents anyway, don't want to see their kids hungry or starving or in a situation where they could have been better or they could have, I feel like a lot of parents too have that thing where it's like, if you listen to me, you will not make a mistake in your life. You will have it's from a very good place because again, like I said, no parent wants to see their kid like in a bad situation or not fulfilling their potential or purpose. But at the end of the day, there's also that element of what would they say about me?
Well, yeah. You
know, there's that element where parents are like, you know, what? Yes, it's your career, but it's my job. Like, I have to be able to say, my daughter is a doctor.
Yeah. I will even, like, maybe say something controversial. It's not just from a good place. For a lot of African parents, it's from a traumatic place. And it's a traumatic place of not being able to be... like not living up to everything they wanted to do, so now they have to have their kids do it, you know, so that they can so that it heals something in them that didn't get the chance to. And I feel that deeply when I look at a lot of immigrant stories and a lot of immigrant parents and people who came especially to these countries wanting big things for themselves, and they just, you know, they dealt the cards they'd been... What's the saying?
They played the cards they'd been dealt,
right? Yeah. But it maybe wasn't everything they wanted. So their last thing is to say, yeah, my kid did it. So you know?
That's a really great perspective because it's true.
Yeah. And with healing, that's when they start to see, actually, my kid can be happy and making money as an artist or doing this or doing that. Yeah. And I don't need to have my own childhood dreams fulfilled by them.
Through them, yeah. It's that thing of living vicariously, right? Through another person. And, like, my heart goes out for parents. All
absolutely, mine too. Because,
like, the sacrifice and the, like...
Big up, yeah.
Every single thing they've had to endure, right? To become and to pay for your fees and to bring you to another country and to raise you right and to...
Even absolutely. Though
you're
in another
country, you're not losing your roots. You're not losing your identity of who you are. Like... It takes a lot of work and sacrifice and investment, and they see it as that.
An investment in a lot of ways. Yeah.
Well,
something is.
Where
is the fruit? You know,
I want to tell my friends, my daughter is a doctor, my daughter is a lawyer, my child is a this and a that. Mm-hmm. And it's that thing of pride too. And I think
that's
that
true.
It's almost, I had a conversation in a previous episode with a mom on, I think it was episode 19, where Shula, this awesome woman who, you know, brought her family from Zambia to the US, then finally to Canada. We were having a conversation and she said, there's that level of peer pressure as well, that parents are not immune to it.
Yeah, like when you 100%.
Hear all your friends say, "Oh, my son is the president of this foundation. He's in this. This one, my daughter is married to the this my," and you're like, "What is my child doing again? Artist? What do you mean, artist? My friend, you must be a doctor, you know?" And there's that element then of like, this is yes, it's for you to be something in life, but this is for me too.
Yeah, absolutely. I like. There's that perspective that our parents are people too. Yeah, they're people
truly,
too.
And they are, yeah.
And they're experiencing life for the first time too, you know? So grace is definitely like needed.
Needed, 100%. Yeah. So if we could talk about this, well, how did your experience in Asia as a Black student, a Black person, human, navigating all the overtness of... Just like messages that just essentially say you don't belong here, because that's it. That's what what it is, right? We don't give rent out to Black people or to because the unspoken is that you don't belong here.
Yeah,
and that's essentially the message that racism propagates, right? Is that go back to where you're from. You don't belong here. Therefore, you don't deserve to have a place to live here. And you don't you know, like there's all these, you know, it's expressed in so many different ways. And that power dynamic also makes it very tricky to navigate. So how did you, if you could just talk about how you held on to your sense of identity. Yeah, like what grounded you, like from Malawi to Michigan to South Africa to the UK to Canada? Like you've been, you said earlier that you've been the new girl in the place over and over again. How have you held on to your sense of self and identity through all these transitions?
Well, yeah, no, that's a big one, because identity has been, yeah, something that I've like grappled with, but I'm now comfortable with. Like initially, and I suspect that more people than we talk about also go through something similar. But before you actually consciously start thinking about your identity, you tend to kind of cling to what is considered the most acceptable versions of your identity. So whether that be light skin, the kind of hobbies that you're into, you want to fit in. And so in most of the spaces I'd been in, especially like as a kid and then teenage years, I did my best to kind of fit in terms of everything from what I, you know, from how you dress to like what you wear, etc. And that does form a part of you. But I think a lot of people in that state who are still trying to fit in and find their place end up then living like double lives because, you know, you kind of don't bring in your Africanness into your daily school or, you know, daily work or whatnot. So you think that they can exist separately. And that happens for a while until I'd say shift happens. And for me, it was going to Asia. And initially, I went to Asia when I was like 19, right? And I'd say like I wasn't very 100% on my identity or anything like that. I still knew, and in my heart, I thought that I had embraced what being African and Malawian was. But I think there was a part of me that was still that still kind of clung on to this idea that I'm Western, I'm essentially American, to be very honest, or I'm first gen. And whilst I saw the difference, and other Black people saw the difference, when you're in an Asian context, they see you're Black, you are
That's it.
African. That's it. Like, you are African. Like, even more, like the most nuanced, most like people will give you as a Black person is maybe you're from Nigeria. It's either
You're
you're from
different color.
Nigeria or you're not, but you're
Yo.
African at least, you know?
Right. Yeah. You're from
So,
somewhere in Africa, though.
but
Well, that's
that's
where
it.
you're
You
from.
know, no
Yeah.
nuance, no grace, no people trying to understand your background and the uniqueness of it. No, like, and initially, I don't know why it did kind of bother me, but then I started to really just kind of get like explore that and be like, well, why does it bother you? You know? And not even for it to bother me, I started to then explore the things I loved about being African and being Black or ex like inhabiting this body. I was like, okay, I might consider myself XYZ, and that's okay. Like what I my definition of who I am and what I've been through is probably as unique as my fingerprint, and that's okay that I don't have to explain. So I started to not explain myself anymore to outside influences, and that actually really helped in me very getting very comfortable with the who I was whilst I was studying in Malaysia. So fun fact, Malaysian students, like international students, are not allowed to work legally. So that in and of itself, you're still a student. If your money runs out before the end of the month, you're trying to figure out what to do next. So there were other options, and one of the options that did kind of come up because of the uniqueness of being African in Asia was modeling for really randomly. Yeah, so I started to model, and it was just background extra stuff sometimes. It's silly projects or whatever, and they did not pay well at all. It was complete exploitation. But it was when they start to like cast you in African cultural stuff. That was when I really started to like lean into, you know what? Like, people are even making money off of showcasing our culture, and we're here trying to be white, you know? We're here trying to straighten our hair and lighten our skin and all these things, but people are actually, people see do see our value, and they're just hoping you don't. And that's when I really started to get into my Pan-Africanness. Like I said, Malaysia and a lot of Asian countries have a lot of African immigrant international students, and so I started to really under like when you're meeting somebody like for the first time as an African who's like from Congo or from, you know, from like Ethiopia, all across the continent. And then you're not just meeting, it's like now you guys are united by your common like experience. It was lit. It was lit. Ain't gonna lie, you know? The African scene in Malaysia and Asia in general is popping, and that's when I really began to fall in love with my roots. And I don't know. I never looked back after that. So I don't even remember what your original question was.
That's completely
But
fine. That you answered the question, and it was just like, how did you gain or preserve your sense of identity and self, whether that's like in your Black body and being from Malawi, having all these experiences over all these continents, and now living, because you were born in Africa, you lived in North America, then Europe, and now you're in Asia. Like, you are
It
literally, like you
was,
said, Pan-African. Like, you
yeah,
have
it
been
was.
there, done that, and you have such an interesting collage of experiences being the new Black kid in all these spaces that are not necessarily majority Black spaces, right? So
Absolutely.
yeah.
Yeah, but like, don't even like, I know when I tell the story to people, it sounds very rosy, very like, oh my God, yes, girl. But don't get me wrong, there was a lot of anxiety. There
Yeah.
was a lot of like, there's a lot of heartache that comes with it. There was a lot of like breaking of down of like the original illusions I'd had. You know, the West, and I think African culture in the West kind of teaches you that if you're a good person and you work hard, the world, the universe, God, or whoever will favor you. And at least in the immediate moment, that's not always
That's
true.
not always
It's
true.
not always true, and that's
It gets a lot
okay.
harder. It gets a lot harder before it gets easier.
It gets a lot harder before it gets easier. And so I'd like anybody who's kind of experiencing that lostness in identity, I've been there, I've done that. I still, you know, don't, you know, I'm still figuring things out, but like it's worth navigating through as long as you're true to yourself and
Yes.
your experience is valid. That's like the main thing. It's like I knew myself. Yeah, I grew up eating this and cooking this from Malawi. So even if, you know, other Africans tell me, oh no, you're not African enough because you're more first gen. I used to get that. I'd be like, you know what? My experience is valid enough. I know. And you want to get to that point of view, honestly. That's when you feel free and as a black person, as a person. So, yeah.
Yeah, like thank you. Like I don't know why people feel the need to like comment on other people's experiences of like life or their nationality or blackness or Africanness. Like
Yeah.
I don't get it.
I
Like
don't get it.
you what is your business? What thing
What?
concern you? Let me break this
Literally.
down. Like, what is your
Literally.
concern? Your life experiences are your life experiences. It was no fault of yours that you were moved out of Malawi at the age you were moved out of there. It was
Literally.
no fault of yours. Like, a lot of this, like, you had no control over, right?
Literally, yeah.
So it's very weird. And honestly, sometimes it comes across a little bit like people are jealous when another person, had the opportunity to leave when a lot of people now are like, ah, Jackpot, let's find a way out of here,
You know what
And
I
then
mean?
it's like, you have the audacity to leave at 3, 4 years old. Like,
Yeah.
I wish,
As if
but
you wouldn't have,
yeah,
you
as if
know?
you would have leaped at that opportunity, like,
You
as if
know?
you wouldn't, but then you didn't even have to leap at anything. It was just the path that your family took, right?
Yeah,
So
yeah.
it's very, I find it very, very awkward when people feel the need to challenge another person's nationality or another person's experience of being black, being African, because of
Yeah.
their own life's journey. Like, shut up,
Yeah. Please shut
Asuka.
up. We still
Like,
want to hear it.
be quiet, because
Yeah.
like you yourself, you are outside here, you are in the diaspora, you are not in your
Well,
father's, you're not in Africa, you're not in wherever it is you're from. Like,
literally.
you're also here, you're not okay, so then you're not, right? Like, if we want to go back and forth, we could, so what, it's just very like, it's so belittling and it's so invalidating and dismissive of your experience as someone who is from Malawi, raised in your home. I'm sure if your parents are there, it's a Malawian home,
Of
and you're
course.
eating the food, you're listening to the music, you're dancing the dance, you're speaking the language at home, and
You're
then you go out, you
living.
code switch and live, in the diaspora out here and try to fit in because no one wants to be targeted and no one wants to be a victim of bullying or discrimination. And you make it work,
That's
right?
the
And
thing, yeah.
yeah, it's
Yeah.
not cut and dry for anyone. And so some people have an idea that, oh, you were born here, moved here at a young age. Oh, it was all rosy. No, it wasn't. Like, life is
No,
not
like
rosy for
literally.
anyone.
At all. We're all just trying to survive, bro. I just wish that we'd give each other more grace for all of that. And I'd also wish that people felt more empowered to share their stories. Because one thing I realized, like when I was studying in Malaysia, I loved meeting interesting people. And there were so many stories from the continent, African people who were doing amazing things, sad things, all sorts of things. But in the name of survival, that I feel like a lot of people can relate to, but we don't tell our stories.
Yes,
And
and that's
that's why
what this podcast is for.
I love your platform because Like, it's doing, like, oh, you're doing the work, girl. You're doing the work. And if anybody's listening and you're kind of like, yeah, no, but my story is not boring, it's not interesting, like, tell your story anyways, because there's somebody who's gonna like relate. So,
yes.
Yeah.
Yes, 100%. Send a DM, send an email. You're welcome to come on the podcast and tell your story. Regardless of where you're from, you don't have to be from Canada.
Absolutely.
You can come on here and share your story. But yes, Tandy, thank you so much for sharing that. You know, before you go, I just need a word of advice. Let the listeners, people who have heard your story, if there is a word of wisdom, you have a word of advice, yeah, share something.
Okay, so like you've heard my story, all that. I guess you can kind of tell I'm very big on learning and growing as a person and education, in general. I believe education outside the classroom, especially, and just this idea that, you know what, like at the end of the day, that is the thing that is going to determine whether you sink or swim anywhere. Your ability to learn, your ability to adapt and to grow doesn't mean an ability to like take on bullshit. It doesn't mean an ability to, you know, completely change who you are, but you have to have an initiative, like a drive for life, if you're going to make it, especially in a place like Canada. And by make it, I mean even just make a comfortable life for yourself. You need to even have that initiative to, whether it be finding opportunities, creating opportunities for yourself, or even just protecting yourself in terms of boundaries and advocating for the things you want. Education is lifelong. And, you know, yeah, education is lifelong. And, like, invest in your education. The education that happens outside the classroom, that is something you will not regret. So, yeah, that's my biggest, like, message, I guess.
Yes, thank you for sharing that. Investing, like, yeah, you said it, you can't stop learning in life. Like, you're either learning in a classroom or life is teaching you a lesson.
I literally say, like, I learned more outside of medical school than medical school taught me, because that's life.
Life just is life. All right, and for today's class. Oh my days. Oh, thank you again. Thank you again, Tandy. Would you mind sharing your social media?
So you can like keep up with all the projects and interesting stuff I'm on at T with Tandy. So that is TAE.with.Tandy. So TANDI. So yeah, that's where to find me.
Yes, awesome. And for our listeners, thank you for sticking with us through this episode. We'll see you next time. We'll see you next week. All right? Take care. Bye-bye. Say bye, Tandy.
Bye.
Bye. Thanks for having us.